AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Volatility rolled back into the grain markets with yesterday's USDA reports, and the air was immediately leaked out with the markets closed for today. We'll see if the buying interest in corn on Thursday can make the leap over a three-day weekend and into Monday's trade. For now, get ready for some out-of-the-norm conversation about weather and markets.
From Good Friday Afternoon via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we chat with Sean Hackett from Hackett Financial Advisors. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lowry.
All right, Davis. Hey, buddy. Happy Good Friday. Happy Easter. I hope all is well.
All is well indeed, sir. How about you?
Good. Doing just fine. Just fine. Markets are closed today.
They are.
Gives us an opportunity to have maybe that out-of-the-normal conversation and dig a little deeper into some issues that are really interesting to me. I know they're interested to a lot of viewers, and I hope they're going to be interesting to you. With Sean Hackett, when we get him going on the weather and the cycles,
yeah,
and it's not just one particular cycle. When he starts listing off the things that need to line up for, you know, the unicorn growing season to happen, and it's happening and it's lining up, that's when you really start to pay attention to how things might turn out in this 2024 growing season. Mm-hmm. And hey, it could extend into 2025. So
yes,
a lot going on. A lot going on.
Sean Hackett is an atmospheric river of information.
Yeah, there you go. Yes. Hey, are you saying that's like drinking from a fire hose?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. It's yes, yes.
Yes, it is. Yes,
but
it
we'll
is.
Have a few days, you know, to digest, to soak
right.
it in, to think it through. So, you know what? Let's open the conversation wide. Let's let him go. Let's just open the chute. See what happens.
Amen to it. Amen to that. All right, buddy, let's get into what was going on in the markets.
Well, the markets are closed today, so not a whole lot. But yesterday, wheat futures traded higher for most of the session and followed the rally in corn futures to post the highest close since March 4. Other spring wheat acres this year expected to total 11.335 million. That's about 440,000 more than traders expected and up about 135,000 acres from last year. Wheat stocks in all positions on March 1, 1.087 billion bushels. That's up 158 million from a year ago and 17 million bushels above the average pre-report trade guess. In Thursday morning's weekly export sales report for the week ended March 21, wheat sales totaled nearly 340,000 metric tons. That topped lackluster trade expectations. On Thursday's close, July hard red winter wheat futures were 5¾ cents higher at 579¾. July SRW wheat up 13 cents to 575¾. July spring wheat closed at 653. That's down 4¼ cents, Chip.
Yeah, at the end of a four-day work week for the markets, July SRW wheat up 6¼ cents. July hard red down a nickel. And July spring wheat down 12¾.
Well, corn claimed the golden ticket of increased volatility from Thursday's USDA reports. USDA's survey of growers revealed intentions to plant just 90 million acres to corn in 2024. That's down about 4.6 million acres from last year and about 1.7 million below the average pre-report trade guess. And that was enough to send corn futures sharply higher.
Yep.
May corn opened near session lows and posted a high range close, although settlement prices were well off session highs. Corn posted an upside reversal on the daily chart. Stocks in all positions on March 1 of 8.35 billion bushels, up about 950 from last year, but 80 million bushels below the average trade guess. Corn export sales, week ended March 21, 1.2 million metric tons. That was at the high end of trade expectations. On yesterday's close, May corn futures were 15 and one quarter cents higher at 442. July corn up 15 and one quarter to 454 and a half. December corn futures closed at 477 and three quarters. Chip, that's up 15 and one half cents on the day.
All right, on the week, July and December corn futures both gained 2.5 cents.
Soybean export sales in the week ended March 21 totaled 264,000 metric tons, falling short of trade expectations. But it had the bean market under some pressure early in the session. May beans opened mostly steady, fell to spike support at last week's low, then rallied back to $12 on support from the gains in corn futures. Prices then pulled back to close just below the opening range. Bean plantings this year expected to total 85.61 million acres, up nearly 3 million acres from a year ago, but right in line with trade expectations. Soybean stocks in all positions, 1.85 billion bushels up, 158 million bushels from a year ago, and 17 million bushels above trade expectations. May beans were a penny lower yesterday, 11.91 and one half. July beans down 1 1/4 to 12.05 and a quarter. Novi beans closed at 11.86 and one quarter. Chip, that's up 2 3/4 cents.
Yeah, not a lot of movement on yesterday's trade. And get this for the week. July soybeans were down 0.25 cents.
What?
November beans down just 0.75 cents.
Wow.
July bean oil on the week, up 27 points. July bean meal, down $2.10.
Well, Chip, cotton export sales in the week ended March 21 of 98,200 running bales were up 46% from the four-week average. Cotton plantings for 24 expected to total 10.673 million acres. That's up about 400,040 from last year, but about 230,000 below trade expectations. July cotton 53 points higher at 91.97. How the cottons do on the week?
Up 12 points.
Okay.
That was it.
Up, yep. Up is good. Up is good.
Yep.
Beef export sales, 12,700 metric tons, just above the four-week average. Cattle futures continued to claw back early week losses. April fats $1.40 higher, 185 even. April feeder futures 25 cents higher, 247 and one half. And on the snout side, pork export sales, week ended March 21, 55,300 metric tons. A new marketing year high, Chip, up by nearly two-thirds from the four-week average. Mexico at the top of the list of buyers. Front month lean hog futures closed higher in each day of this holiday shortened week. April hogs 52.5 higher, 86.62.5 in June, down 15 cents, but 101.45, Chip.
All right. April live cattle on the week. It was a crazy week in the cattle complex.
A little bit,
Yeah. April live cattle on the week down $2.50. April feeder cattle down $4.37.5. And April lean hogs up $2.05 on the week. That's going to be a challenge to maintain that after Friday's quarterly hogs and pigs report. A bit negative coming in here is what it looks like. All hogs and pigs on March 1 up 0.6%. The trade was looking for right at steady with a year ago. So the all hogs and pigs inventory just a little bit heavier than what the trade expected. But a lot of that is in the breeding herd. The number of hogs kept for breeding down 2.1% from a year ago. The trade was looking for a 3.5% cut in the breeding herd. And then the kept for marketing numbers up 0.8% from a year ago. The trade was looking for 0.3% in the increase there. So the hog herd a bit bigger than what the trade was anticipating. I don't want to make a big deal out of this thing because that hog market is kind of all over the place, but might be a little bit negative after an up week this week. All right, thank you so much for joining us. Stay tuned. We got Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors, next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you're with us on this Friday afternoon. Happy Good Friday. Happy Easter to everyone out there. Markets were closed today, so it gives us a great opportunity to have a conversation with people that maybe, you know, they pay attention to the day-to-day price action, but the bigger picture is more in view for some of the people that we like to have on days when the markets are closed. One of those guys, Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors. He's our guest analyst today. Sean, it's great to talk with you. How are you?
I'm great. Never been better and excited to be on your show.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Of course, Davis is still here as well.
I'm here.
Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah. So, Davis, we're going to be talking a lot of weather. We're going to be talking a lot of crop potential. And when you get a nerd like Hackett and a nerd like me talking about weather, every now and then we might need you to kind of chime in and say, hey, guys, bring it back to the center line.
I'll bring the Fonzie.
Like that. Okay.
I'll play the role of Fonzie today.
Cool.
No problem.
That's awesome. All right, Sean, before we get to the U.S., it was a super interesting growing season in Brazil. Started off with a level of concern over the bean crop. Now, as time goes on, we find out that there were even more beans planted, or at least that's what we think, that there were even more beans planted. The late harvested beans seem to be yielding pretty good. But when you get right down to it in Brazil, for the U.S. markets, we're really focused on that Safrinha corn crop, the second corn crop. What's the situation down there?
I think everyone, it's important to understand how you have a good crop for second crop corn. Their pollination is mid-late April to mid-late May. That's their dry season. They don't typically get a lot of rain, so they need to have substantial subsoil moisture going into it so the crop can carry through and have a big crop. The problem is, because we've had this extended drought through the entire growing season, the subsoil moisture going 1 meter down is the driest subsoil moisture since we've been keeping records on this area of Central West Brazil. So they have nothing in reserve. And we have what's called an El Niño Modicai. We've spoken about it on your show before, where you have warm sea surface temperatures in the Central Pacific, colder on the east, creating a condition in the upper airflow pattern that deprives Mato Grosso of moisture. That is ongoing. And we expect mid-April to mid-late May to be drier than normal during the dry season with no subsoil moisture. When we have seen that combination in the past, corn yields have been down anywhere from 15 to 25%. So, you know, we're thinking we're going to be on the upper end of that range. And as you know, Chip, they dominated corn exports last year. We're the largest exporter in the world. And so what they lose, we gain. And that would be great news for improving export demand, out of the U.S., which has been a sore spot for the last 12 months.
Yeah. Now, when Sean is on, we talk a lot about weather, but Sean pays attention to what's going on the export side, on total demand side, and everything. And you know what the story has been on corn. It's been getting kind of a so-so rap. Early in the marketing year, corn exports stunk. We could not come up with a price-positive story off of the demand side of the market on exports. Now, for the past 6 weeks, our weekly export sales numbers have really been pretty good. And if we could give them some kind of a Safrinha scare punch, all of a sudden, your corn export story turns into a potentially a price positive story, doesn't it, Sean?
Well, it really does. And if you take today's planting intentions report at around 90 million acres of corn being planted, and you start running the numbers, you know, all of a sudden, you know, your balance sheet, you know, conceivably could get considerably tighter than, you know, sub $4 cash corn that we've been trading here for quite some time. So, you know, the wheels are starting to shift here on corn. And of course, with speculators record short as a percentage of open interest in the market, you know, there's a potential here for them to exit and all the algorithms to say, you know, maybe we didn't think this through very well. We need to get on the other side.
Yeah, the funds, there's no doubt that yesterday's prospective planning report brought the volatility back into the corn market. And a lot of it was just simply, I would assume, I haven't seen the trade numbers yet, but I would assume that it was the specs getting out of the short positions in corn. We've been wondering what it might take to trigger that in a big way, but maybe even more importantly, what does it take to get them to go from short to neutral to buying corn and establishing a long position? Sean, that's what could give us the bump, right?
Yeah, I think the planting intentions report we got, and I think that a Safrina corn crop scare is enough to get them out, to get them long. I think we need a major crop problem in the U.S., and that's something I think we're going to talk about here in a little bit.
You bet. You bet. Well, before we get to the break, let's go ahead and start that conversation. We're going to talk a lot about ENSO, the status of El Nino and La Nina. So give us an ENSO status report. What is the current condition?
We are weakening the El Nino rapidly, something we spoke about the last time. So it's a transition year. We started the year with a moderately strong El Nino. We're going to end the year with a moderately strong La Nina. And so this is what they call a quintessential transition year. We have had many of these in the past. And, you know, when you do that, what happens is you tend to have a little more favorable weather in the beginning. And as you go through the growing season, things tend to get worse and more problematic as you'll get to the middle part and the back half. Of course, timing is everything, and we could talk a little more about things to look for, about what would make it worse or better. But certainly this is, you know, last year was exactly the opposite. We were going from La Nina to El Nino, and we're reversing, you know, right back to, you know, back into a La Nina situation. And looking further out, Chip, that means that the South American growing season is going to be a 100% La Nina growing cycle, which means Southern Brazil and Argentina are going to be back on the hot seat, just like they were the prior year. And of course, that means we could have a lot to worry about, at least in the first half of their growing cycle.
Yep. You know, it seems to happen this way, Sean. Every time it feels like we're getting into a period of comfortable supply side fundamentals, where there's a supply side cushion, things change. Things change so quickly. And the quickest way to change the market's attitude is with some kind of a crop problem. And I think that's kind of what we are looking at potentially developing. And I will say this, Sean, it's been a while since you've been on the show, and we talked about this transition at that time.
Yes.
Now it's becoming more and more common to see the conversation about this transition happening in, you know, among all of the analysts, it seems like people are talking about it. Can we do too good of a job of anticipating this weather transition?
Well, I think it's very important to understand what makes, we went back, Chip, and looked at the 8 worst crop problems we've had in the U.S. over the last 100 years.
Okay.
There's two things that absolutely have been a part of every single one of them. And if they're not there, we've never had one. One thing we've talked about before is there's this 18.6 Earth nutation cycle, when the Earth wobbles 5 degrees off center, when we're at maximum wobble, like we are now, 24 and 25 is a maximum wobble. Every single major crop problem has occurred either at that maximum wobble or 2 years hence. So we are right at the point where every single major drought has occurred with that cycle. We always talked on your show about the 11-year sunspot solar cycle. Mm-hmm. Every single major crop problem has occurred between the trough and the peak on the upswing of that solar cycle. We are now in the early stages of developing the peak of that upswing cycle. Both those cycles have to be in alignment together at the same time for you to have the potential for a major crop problem. If they're not, you won't, but both of them are in alignment this year and next, which means this is when we would expect, you know, something much, much bigger to happen than we've seen in really since 2012.
Exactly. Okay. I'll just call it the wobble cycle. We've established that we're right in the middle of that. The sunspot cycle, just beginning that. It's all going to come together, and we've got to talk about some of the longer range cycles that are happening in this weather outlook as well. Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors, our guest on today's AgriTalk.
The markets are closed today, but let's check the markets page at ProFarmer.com for Thursday's closes, where July HRW wheat futures were 5 3/4 higher at 579 3/4. July SRW wheat up 13 cents, 575 3/4. May corn futures were 15 1/4 cents higher at 442. December corn futures closed at 477 3/4, up 15 1/2 cents. May soybeans, one penny lower on Thursday at 11.91 1/2. November beans closed at 11.86 1/4, up 2 3/4 cents. July cotton, 53 points higher, 91.97. On your livestocks, April fat cattle were $1.40 higher at 185 even. April feeder futures, 25 cents higher, but 247.12 1/2. And April lean hog futures, 52 1/2 cents higher at 86.62 1/2. Get more market news every market day. Visit tryprofarmer.com.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. We are in the middle of a conversation with today's guest analyst, Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors, and we are into the weather conversation and the cycles. We've talked about the earth wobble cycle. I love that. The sunspot cycle, where we are in that. That's where we wrapped up the end of the last segment. Now, when you start getting convergence of the short, I'll call them a shorter term cycle, even though they're 18-year or an 11-year, I'll call them shorter cycles because if it's setting up for something big, it's got to be setting up for something long-term, right?
Absolutely. And so getting back to those alignments you just said, mm-hmm. there are certain features, once you have those two cycles synchronistic, we need to be on the lookout for. Every major drought in the U.S., you've had a warm sea surface temperature of the North Atlantic. If you go off Nova Scotia or off of Maine, you need a hot body of water there. Every single one has had that condition. If we've had the wobble cycle and an 11-year solar cycle in alignment, which we do, we want to be looking for that. Doesn't matter what it is today, Chip. It matters what it is right in mid-June, because we're looking at July into August, you know, to have that hot, dry weather pattern. Right now, it's starting to warm, and we're going to be watching that. The other feature is that we have never had a major crop problem if we have an El Nino, but it doesn't have to be a La Nina. It just needs to be neutral, a neutral condition, meaning as long as it's neutral, the 1934 drought and the 1936 drought of the Dust Bowl were neutral cycles. 2012 was a neutral cycle. 1988 was a La Nina cycle. Yep. It just can't be El Nino. So I'm very confident we're going to have at least that. Right. And the other important feature is we want to be looking at something we've talked about before in your show, something called the negative Pacific decadal oscillation, which is that cold ring of sea surface temperatures off California. Either that, or we need a cold Gulf of Alaska, that North Pacific sea surface temperature. 2012, we had a cold Gulf of Alaska. In 88, we had a cold Gulf of Alaska. In 1936, we had a negative PDO. One or both. You know, one or the other or both is another important feature. Right now, the Gulf of Alaska is colder than normal. But once again, it doesn't matter what it is today. It matters what it is in mid-June. Every single time we've been at a peak wobble cycle, we've had a cold Gulf of Alaska. Doesn't mean it has to happen again, but means that this is the kind of pattern we'll be looking for to really give ourselves higher and higher confidence as these signposts go by, that this year could offer something more than we've seen in the last 4 years. And the key, Chip, has to be hot. You need 100 degree days, not 90, 100 degree days, multiple days. We haven't had that since 2012. Every major crop problem has had at least 10 100 degree days from the period of late June to the middle part of August. You know how many we've had in the last 4 years? Two. So hot and dry is the key. Dry is fine, but hot and dry. And this is the cycle that we're looking at to bring the heat in. And we have Tonga, that volcanic eruption that pumps all that water vapor in the stratosphere, creating these hot weather psycho extremes all over the world, is still in place and will still be in place for another couple of years. That where it should be hot, it could be super hot. So we have the setup here, Chip, for something special on that front this year or next.
Okay. So where you and I have talked several times about the 89-year drought cycle, and you know who my go-to guy is on that, Elwin Taylor at Iowa State University. And we've talked about it many times, what is the name that you put on it? Is it the Gleisberg cycle or something like that?
It's the Gleisberg cycle. Dr. Gleisberg. Yeah. Okay. Dr. Gleisberg was a physicist who studied the sun and determined that after 89 years, it completes what's called an entire solar cycle, which is 8 11-year solar cycles, completes an entire solar cycle. It's kind of like a clock starting from, going 24 hours and starting to clock over again. He found at the end of that 89-year complete one cycle of a solar cycle, you create the upper airflow pattern that creates the potential for a 1 in 100 year drought. And it spans 3 year potential, meaning there's 3 years that it could be it. This cycle would be either 2023, which already passed, 2024, or 2025. We went back through tree ring analysis and ice core samples and did what's called a recreation of Palmer drought severity indices to try to see how long has this cycle been verifying. And we've been able to verify this cycle going back to the year 955 to the present, meaning the last 11 centuries in that three-year window that I just mentioned, we have had a 1 in 100-year drought develop based upon this 89-year Gleisberg cycle. Does it mean it absolutely positively has to happen again? I can't say that. All I know is the natural forces at work that drive it, from what I can see, are still in place, which means we need to be on, you know, on message and on board for really watching out for something that could really create, you know, a tremendous, tremendous disruption in the supply food chain of agriculture around the world.
Well, and then when you see all these other factors lining up, as you've described, Sean, it feels like it is a red flag alert for drought watch into the second half of 24 and into 25, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're a big believer, and you want to look for what we call cycle synchronicity. When more and more cycles are aligning in the same fashion, pointing in the same direction, each one having a high correlation coefficient, you're adding amplitude to a higher order situation than you would otherwise. And that goes for economics, that goes for currencies, that goes for geopolitics. You can use this cycle synchronization methodology for all of these things to look for when could there be an outsized order of magnitude rogue wave type of an anomaly that creates significant disruption in the marketplace.
Right. Okay. I feel like we are far enough into the conversation here, Sean, that we need to start talking about, zeroing in on what it might mean for the growing season ahead. If I know that I know you've thought about how this growing season is going to play out. Give me a summary.
We believe that we're not really expecting to see unfavorable conditions, meaning hot and dry, until we get to mid late June this year. Very different from last year, meaning we don't think we're going to have, you know, anything to worry about from a moisture profile, because the El Nino transition is going to keep El Nino hanging on for a little while. However, however, we are seeing significant cycle work that tells us to watch out for a major frost event in the first half of May that could create a significant disruption in the planting season. Because right now we're expecting a very warm April. We think the planters are going to rock and roll, but we could get this significant hard freeze in the first half of May. Winter wheat, early planted corn and soybeans, you know, it could really disrupt the planting cycle, creating another variable that if we go into a hot, dry July and August, you know, could create even additional angst.
Oh, yeah.
So that's our feeling is that spring, watch for that. And then watch for a pattern of hot and dry to develop by mid, late June through the middle part of August. We're worried we could get some precipitation late in the season because of an active hurricane season that a La Nina would provide, meaning we could get a lot of activity in the Gulf of Mexico, creating, you know, these shots of tropical moisture that could come in and create some rainfall, let's say in the middle part of August onward. So we're really focused on that late June, the first half of August window before that tropical moisture has a chance to come on in. And once again, if we can get some of these other shorter term sea surface temperature cycles that we discussed in alignment, that's really the place to be watching out for this.
Okay. So market reaction, what is going to be your main theme when it comes to risk management in corn from this point forward?
Well, with the favorable planting intentions report and a favorable poorly grain stocks report, I might add, if we can get ourselves a planting season frost spike trade into latter part of April into May, you as a producer are going to want to make sure you take advantage of that you make those cash sales or you protect downside price risks. You know, you can't just wait to try to sell it all at one time because we don't know the future for sure. That would be my first idea, is to make sure you're going to do a good job of playing that first leg up in the market. Because you know what's going to happen, Chip? We're going to get into June. Oh my gosh, it looks pretty good. The crop's finally planted.
Yep.
We're going to have a record crop. And then we would look for a second opportunity. Usually, you know, the market will very rapidly put weather premium on and peak this market out, you know, typically late July into mid-August before topping out. And we're going to be looking to sell into that. And You don't wait for, like, you know, the top. You start selling into strength because, you know, Mother Nature is what it is. The weather models are what they are. But we think those two windows of opportunity to cash sell your crop or price protect your crop are really going to be something to pay attention to and get to do a good job with.
Excellent. Sean, thank you so much for making time for us. We really appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you later.
You too, Chip. Sounds good. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you so much. That is Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors. Davis and I will be right back.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Acuron. Discover 5 to 15 more bushels per acre with Acuron corn herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal, Davis Michelson, here on your Good Friday. Thanks so much for tuning in today to AgriTalk. Chip is here somewhere, huh?
I'm here, dude.
Is he here?
I'm right here. Right here.
Hello. Yep. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good.
Really great conversation with Sean Hackett, man. I love it when you guys get geeking out on those cycles and whatnot. That's awesome.
Oh, dude. You know my attitude about cycles.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely, positively believe in them. And it's not faith-based on these cycles. There is real evidence out there that these things repeat.
Apparently.
And how people don't notice it is beyond me.
Yeah, apparently these trends go back. Sean Hackett says that he's verified these back to 955 A.D.,
there you go.
The year 955.
Right.
That's a long time ago. I don't know who wrote it down back then.
You know, when I talked with Elwin Taylor at Iowa State about all this, it got me reading about tree ring studies.
Oh, sure.
When I was in college, and that left a great impression on me. No doubt about it. You can learn a lot by looking at tree rings, which is why I always wanted to go to the big trees, the redwoods and the sequoias in Northern California, because I knew that there was a section out there that had like 1,500 years of history in these tree rings. I think my wife had 4 ice cream cones while I stood there and stared at this tree ring and read everything that was on it. Just, fascinating too.
Well, I imagine they frown on you conducting your own dendrochronology experiments on these. You can't just drill into them yourself, right?
Look at you.
Huh?
Look at you. Yes. No, they don't like that.
Yeah.
I
wouldn't imagine. So. Interesting, because you mentioned the cycles, and that's kind of what we're talking about here, that 89-year cycle in particular, but also solar cycles.
Yes.
We're talking about the Enzo cycle, the El Nino La Nina sort of cycle thing here. And what he came to was cycle synchronicity. And I'm fascinated by this idea because his thought is when you have these factors moving synchronously in synchronicity, it adds amplitude.
Yes.
So in other words, you get all these factors in and they're kind of all lining up all at the same time. It makes the potential outcome, it lends it greater potential. Did
right.
I say that right?
Yeah. It makes it more likely.
Thank you. Yes. That's what I was going for. Mm-hmm. And we have a number of those cycles synchronizing even as we speak, don't we?
Exactly. Exactly. All of a sudden I've just got the Police in my head.
Me too. Me
Secret.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Is that my mother on the phone? let's make it real. Let's make it usable here. How do we,
okay.
Dude, we can't predict that.
Right.
We can talk about what might happen. We can talk about what has happened under similar
exactly.
conditions, but we still have to try and market a crop here, bro.
But, and we were talking with someone that has put as much effort into figuring out the cycles, tracking the cycles, being open-minded to the potential that this can happen, that it can repeat. And at the same time, he was talking about selling strength.
Yes.
As the markets react to the potential
mm-hmm.
of crop problems, as the markets react to the potential for some planting issues leading up to a freeze in May. Okay? He's still talking about selling strength because, and as much as I have been following this for the last 40 years, Davis, there is no way that I would say, well, the second half of this growing season is going to be hot and dry. We're going to lose 10%, 15% of the U.S. corn crop. Therefore, we're just going to wait for that to happen before you do anything. No way, no how.
Yeah, no, you can't do that. Because
no
it's too late.
No way, no how.
When it does happen.
Yes, that is exactly right. You've got to be responsive. You've got to know what your numbers are. There it is again. Go ahead, roll your eyes. You got to know what your numbers are. You got to know what your returns are. And when those return targets are hit, you want to be as aggressive as you normally would be in your marketing. Now, I will say this. I'm going to ask you to maintain some flexibility. And that can be as simple as being willing to reopen some upside potential by eventually purchasing a call option.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's all the flexibility I'm asking for.
Yeah.
But to maximize your opportunities over the next couple of years, because we've taken so much optimism out of the markets already, as that optimism comes back in, you've got to be ready to take advantage of that. And the flexibility, cash sales, reowning with a call option, I think is a strategy that's going to be popular again over the next couple of years.
Yep, yep. So in his narrative of the upcoming growing season, and a gutsy move just to make a forecast this far out, but if things play out the way Hackett says they could, we're looking for that, what he called a major frost around mid-May,
yeah.
And then we get super hot and dry late in June through August. That is not the right time to be hot and dry, Chip.
No, no. You know, we always talk about the recipe or the prescription, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
for a big yield is if you're going to have some heat, have it early in the season and rush that corn crop up to pollination. Mm-hmm. Then at pollination and after pollination, normal to slightly below normal temperatures is about perfect. Just slow it down a little bit and let it get bigger into the year. So, got a lot to look forward to in the year ahead, don't we?
We absolutely do.
Absolutely. Hey, buddy, happy Easter.
Hey, you too, brother.
All right, and happy Easter to everybody out there. Come back on Monday morning. We're going to have a conversation with Machinery Pete right here on AgriTalk.